All right. Well, welcome in an awkward sort of way to Cambridge Inside Out.
It's only a few seconds late. Hi, I'm Judy Nathans.
And tonight is the post-apocalyptic episode after the 2021 municipal election, right?
Oh, that's right. We did not meet. We haven't met since then. It was that night. You're right.
Yeah.
And with all your mathematical skills and stuff.
It's a curious time for me, honestly. Yes, what happens, I've been doing this now since 1997, where I get the ballot data as soon as it's legally possible to do it, which means after the final official election results are
announced. Steal the votes, right? No, you don't steal.
Well, I mean, there are reasons why you really shouldn't get that until after it's all completely in the can, right? So that actually happened on this past Friday, November 12th, where they had a certain number of provisional ballots that needed to be adjudicated.
Right.
When that's typically things like somebody, said they were registered, but they weren't on the rolls, but then they had to go verify with the registry of motor vehicles that they really had been, they really should have been on the rolls, things like that. There were some which were not allowed because because they didn't really live in Cambridge. They just said
they did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So they go through there. And then there was a certain number of these overseas absentee ballots.
Yeah.
There was a new category of ones of people basically who showed up, very late in the game and then said,
What do you mean very late? Like 5 to 8?
The ballot, you could vote up until 8 p.m.
Yeah.
So what happened then was there were some people who, if you show up and you're supposed to, you moved from one place in Cambridge to another, you thought it was okay to vote one, but there simply wasn't enough time to
go back to the other precinct. Yeah. They allowed them to vote?
Yeah, because it's the same ballot. And then they counted in the precinct where you're supposed to have voted, even though it was actually cast in the other one. So that's done with a data entry at the last minute. So anyway, they do that and then they run the count. Honestly, once I got the ballot data, I do my own tests of running the ballot data through the tabulation software just to make sure I get the same results as the city. And I did.
That's good.
It's sort of a nice independent check. I mean, the city already has two people who independently will run the tab. They'll write their own configuration files. They will independently run it on separate machines, and then they will compare. So there's already that level of redundancy. I'm kind of like the third wheel in this.
That's wonderful.
Where afterwards I'll do it and also check it out. It also gives me the opportunity to actually pour through the data. To kind of look for curiosities. There are a few curiosities that I think I want to find out a little bit more about. I think anomalous things relating to the fact that you could use drop boxes to drop off ballots. be of great concern, but there are little things you can learn. Every time you have an election, there are things you can learn.
Let me ask you, do they have a breakdown of how many people early voted, how many people use drop boxes, how many people mailed?
They have that information.
They do.
I didn't seek that. I only sought the ballot.
Will that ever be made public? I'd be curious to see, is early voting really worth it for a municipal election?
Yeah, I mean, they have a record of how many ballots were early voted and how many were done at the polls.
And also what it costs to do early voting.
Yeah, I mean, and the city did have to cough up some money,
additional
money. I think it was there was a separate appropriation.
Yeah, those are good things to know because it may not be worthwhile, unless it's not that much money, I guess. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. But, can cost, I mean, it's these things aren't cheap, democracy has a price,
Actually, mail-in ballots, I guess, cost money too. I mean, mailing the ballot out, getting it back, that costs money.
Yeah. I mean, my curiosity, and I don't have the answer right here, is how much of this is the state cover and how much does the city cover? I think typically if it's basically an option, a local option for the cities to do early voting or not, then it may well be the case that they have to cover the costs.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. right? Whereas if it's a mandate from the state, we don't like mm-hmm. unfunded mandates,
right?
Then the state would cover the costs for those sorts of things. Yeah, typically.
I think I've read somewhere that something's coming up on the state about voting more. Things are ending, and they're going to have to either the way we vote, right?
We're still.
Under that,
I believe, under the emergency rules.
Okay.
So certain things were extended just through the municipal election then, but maybe, and some things maybe a little bit longer. And not all uniformly. I mean, the mail-in ballots are the one, the early voting, the for municipal elections option, maybe another. And the state legislature will have to finalize it. I'm pretty sure they're going to pretty much make these permanent. Or most of these things permanent. There will, of course, be the usual debate about other reforms, such as same-day voter registration and matters such as that. I don't know really where that stands. Yeah. Meanwhile, we're still doing the reprecincting. That's still not 100% settled.
Right. That's true.
There is some concern I've heard from some people about. Since basically the city had to formally put their information out there, but then the state legislature takes over.
Right.
And then, in order to basically carve out things in the way that they want to do it, they could end up splitting Cambridge precincts in half. So instead of having 33 precincts, which we should ideally have, 11 wards, 3 precincts per ward, last time around, they split one of the ward threes into two. So there were 4 precincts in Ward 3, and it was all done as part of some, I think the goal in that case was dividing the Clark versus Presley district, or whoever preceded it. I think Capuano was the congressman.
Capuano.
And to basically create, in the process of doing things like creating majority-minority districts.
I see what you're saying.
There are a few other priorities that apparently the legislature is trying to do this time around, more statewide,
and they took away Jay Livingstone will no longer.
Sometimes if you're like the last guy in, as a legislature, you don't have as much clout, you might suffer in the redistricting while everybody's trying to protect incumbents, which people typically do. But there's also, I think there was an effort made to create more state rep districts, maybe even state Senate districts, where the probability of having persons of color be elected is greater, so that they could get a better representation in the legislature. So anyway, they've got their priorities, and I'm sure they're all well-meaning. But it does create a little bit of a hellish landscape for the local officials, to kind of deal with it. I mean, I don't want to see, if they end up like splitting 5 precincts in half so that we end up with an additional 5 precincts to cover, it's just a pain in the ass. Yeah. And, I don't know why we do it this way, but we do it this way. So anyway, there's also because of one of the legislatures, who is it? Joseph Bancor. He's leaving.
Right.
So Lydia Edwards and others.
That's right.
And of course, the way we do it, and it's silly.
I know, it's crazy.
We have to do a primary.
I know.
And then a general election for a mid-year, three-quarters of the way through the legislative term. And, our election officials actually have to, set up election systems and do all this stuff and reserve school buildings and all of this stuff.
So wait a minute. So would the alternative be to just have the general election and have Democrats just do ranked choice voting among the?
There are options, right? Never. I never fail to be disappointed in the lack of creativity or ingenuity amongst the elected officials. The fact is they could start moving down a road toward having, at least for vacancy refills, a single ranked choice election.
It would be so much independent of money party. And you could advertise better. No one's going to show up for this December.
For goodness sake, but all you're doing is basically filling out the term. Yeah. That's it.
I know.
And the way that typically works, for filling out the term, is in many states is you just have like the governor makes the appointment or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because it's really just a formality.
Yeah.
But instead, we go through this whole big boneheaded thing only to basically come back next September to do it all again, you know?
Oh, wait, so they serve, if they, whoever's chosen gets to serve till September?
Basically, no, till through 2022.
Oh, okay.
And then they have to go up for re-election.
Well, that's a long time period.
You know, they do have some rules for a short term where they don't have to fill it. They can leave it vacant if it's relatively short. And then I think this is long enough that they have to fill it.
Okay, I'm going to ask a stupid question. I should know. A state senator serves for how long?
2 years.
Same as the rep?
Yes. Yeah.
So why do we have federal Congress people serving for 6 years in the other
United States Constitution, my dear?
Oh my God, that has to be amended. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But that's.
Well, listen. Anyway, you know, yeah. For local, you know, I think there's a good case to be made that local officials should be replenished more frequently than senators. You know, the closer you are to the locality, the more it should be. That's why I think that two-year terms for city councilors, school committee members, state senators, and state reps is probably about right. Of course, you know, now that these ballot questions have prevailed, I can almost guarantee you that when they start doing the charter review for next year, the councilors who are apparently are in the driver's seat of deciding, they are the only ones apparently who have any real control over how to change the charter now, according to this ridiculous outcome.
Yeah.
That the very first thing they're going to try to do is turn their council and the school committee 2 year terms into 4 year terms.
And have an elected mayor.
Possibly staggered.
Have an elected mayor, maybe. Who knows?
Well, I mean, that's a bigger deal because when you do that, you're fundamentally just, you're just trashing the planning.
4 year terms on a community like this? No.
You know, I think it would be a horrible thing.
Although I guess it might help out with the youngins that are here for hardly anything. And maybe they want to move.
Yeah.
So they can't. Well, I guess they'd have to leave, whatever.
You know, I don't see them doing them all at once.
No.
You know, so if they were to go do like they would probably do staggered 4 year terms. So every 2 years.
You know what? They're gonna be busy like with three. All these appointments they have to make, they have to find a city manager, they have to get a city clerk, they're gonna have their plates and they have all these zoning petitions. Give me a break. Come on.
Yeah, and honestly, well, I don't think they have that many zoning petitions to deal with.
No, but they have the Alewife thing, which I guess is going to be passed as a moratorium. That's going to get some challenges, don't you think?
I would think so. I don't know for sure.
I mean, these people that bought property,
for those who are not aware of this, I mean, there was I think it was initiated in around 2014 that eventually led to this Envision Cambridge process started off. First priority was Alewife area planning.
Right. And then it just
that's kind of what drove the whole process anyway. Everything else was sort of an afterthought.
No one paid attention after millions of dollars.
It's pretty typical, honestly. Yeah. I think Patrick Barrett was making a point at a city council meeting last night. I said, you know, it's like, you know, in Central Square, they did this whole K2, C2 process, came up with recommendations, and then the whole thing was just put on the shelf.
Yep.
And it actually took some local people within. And then during that, as sort of a booby prize, the Mass and Main rezoning, which was borderline spot zoning,
that's true. Happened. You're right.
Yeah. And
it's crazy.
Right. And then some of the people around Central Square, business owners, property owners, some of us were involved in that, came through with the Central Square restoration petition, which was basically doing some of the less controversial
from the
items from that those K2C2 recommendations.
Yeah.
And Patrick makes a good point. I said, you know, it's like everybody's saying, well, why were they sitting? Why did everybody fall down on Alewife? I said, well, what about Central Square?
Yeah.
You know, the same city council is basically punted
on
that.
You know what?
Too.
They grab on to whatever the bikes, trees, whatever.
They grab onto popular stuff and run away from anything that's fearful.
Carlone brought that up, I think, last night about, you know, we should have, I mean, you brought up in your comments on your page, but
yeah, I mean,
we have to have a plan here. We should. They had years to make a plan.
I mean, the chronology, as I see it, I mean, there were 40 years ago they came up with the fish book on alewife, right. And they had some good ideas.
1979, right?
Some stuff may have happened, but really, it was only after the demise of rent control that they did some proposals to do rezoning in Concord alewife area, primarily, at least the way I look at it, primarily to encourage housing growth in the former industrial areas. Mm-hmm. So building housing as of right in some of those areas was part of that. And then the growth happened so quickly that people went, oh my God, Elwood Parkway is crowded. I can't get to the Whole Foods, And then it was the Envision Cambridge process comes about as a result of that.
Well, all those tall that got built.
Well, basically what happened was is that the property owners were building out what the zoning said they should build out.
Exactly. It's just
that they were doing it at a pace that people weren't expecting.
Exactly. So I could see then why the reaction would be, hey, we got to slow this down. But 2 years is a long time.
So that's the Envision process came out with recommendations. Yeah. In my view, they should have immediately pitched those over to the ordinance committee or the neighborhood long-term planning committee and said, okay, let's get put on these things in place, even if it's only for a short time, whatever the reasonable, full consensus provisions of the Envision recommendations should have been put into place then. Why they failed to do that? Well, it's because what they do. They failed to do it.
They pay attention to what's in front of them instead of long-term planning, which I think is a human thing. We've done it this
country. Maybe we ought to rename the neighborhood and long-term planning committee. honestly, because if you're not going to do that,
it's not long-term. It's true. It's a short-term planning.
Why are you naming it that at all? I mean, it's just a historical artifact at this point. So what I think, and then what happened is that Cabot Forbes went and picked up property in there. They were going to do development.
And they proposed something.
And then the counselors sort of caught with their drawers down and they basically said, we can't do that.
Yeah.
So then that gets tanked. Now the properties have exchanged hands, apparently over $500 million.
Yeah, they made money on that. I mean, they held on to it. They said, you don't want to do this? Okay, we're not going to come back with another petition. We're just going to sell it.
Right. So then another party comes in and they have been forthcoming saying that they've been talking to the community development department. They're fully aware of the Envision recommendations.
Yeah, somebody last night talked, I forget who he represent, one of these people came in.
So it could work out, I suppose, if they were planning to do that. But, if it is the intention of this city council to pass a moratorium so that they can then come back with zoning recommendations and maybe pass an amendment to the zoning ordinance, which greatly diminishes what the people who just dropped more than half a billion dollars on this were planning to do, then you've got yourself fertile ground for legal action. And I think the city council, if there's a lesson to be learned here, is that when you're talking kind of high stakes stuff like this, you can't just punt. You can't wait and then show up when something is on the table and then say, moratorium. Yeah. Sure, maybe we got to do that now. But to me, the fact that they will likely do that is really in itself kind of an indicator of the failure to act.
All right, I heard the word PUD last night. It could have been from Carlone. Are these the buyers of this property looking for that? Because they have all these
typically,
So then how would zoning then, do they go in under existing zoning or are they subject to changes? I know this came up.
The existing zoning is the existing zoning.
Because
now that they've actually passed this petition, then basically there's a little asterisk gets put on all your building permits because you build at your own risk now, or not build at your own risk. And, while
the zoning is pending. What do you mean they What do you mean they passed it? I thought they passed it last night, but doesn't that have to go through
the
ordinance?
What they did is they passed the order to refer it to the ordinance committee and planning board. So it is now in the queue as an officially filed zoning petition from the city council. Okay. So at that point, the developer could start building, though I don't think they would be doing that anyway, because it takes time to plan out what you want to do. So anyway, so what's going to actually happen? I don't know. But in terms of the planned unit development point, the truth is that if you're dealing with a relatively large area with many parcels on it that have been assembled for the purpose of doing something big and bombastic, then you don't typically want to have, I don't think anybody in the room wants to then just sort of lay some uniform zoning. You basically want to allow some flexibility to reallocate heights and things. And you want to also, because these buildings are not going to be built all at once.
Right.
You basically want to basically get your approvals under whatever the zoning turns out to be, because it's going to, the build out will probably take a decade or more. And, you know, you need to get your okays in order before you get all your financing worked out. Though I don't know, maybe if you can drop over $500 million, maybe financing isn't the issue.
But I hope they consider. I mean, the whole light industrial seems to have been,
that was one of the
road, which is too bad.
I think Dennis Carlone pretty much said, "Look, there was no actual plan in Envision as such. It was a lot of sketches. Says these are some good ideas and whatever, but a real urban plan." You know, urban design plan is a lot more detailed than that. And you know, that should have happened. And you know, it is just so frustrating sometimes to deal with the civic and political people in the city, where they basically are being paid well to do a job and they don't want to show up for work.
But wait a minute, then what? Like Boston has this redevelopment authority. That's equivalent to our Cambridge one.
Not really. I mean,
should another entity then? I mean, the planning board only responds to things. They don't initiate things. Who could initiate that outside of the councilors? The community development?
Nobody. Well, yeah, community development, because they work for the city manager who works for the council. Yes.
Are they somewhat responsible for not?
If they weren't asked to do it, I mean, well, excuse me, they were asked to do it.
They hired
the Envision process, right?
I know. So what they shepherded that whole process.
Honestly, you know,
I don't know. Someone's got to take responsibility, because I can't expect the counselors, who really maybe one or two of them know a lot about this stuff. A lot of them don't. It's more aspirational, or they're responding to constituents. And I don't think, honestly, I don't know.
You don't need to have. You can do just fine with just a few of the counselors being expert, as long as the other counselors are good listeners and reasonable. I mean, there's an issue there, of course. But you know, you don't need to have 27. You don't need to have 9 cooks in the kitchen. You can have just a few cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah, but you need a majority though.
Adding the spices.
You need a majority though to make it happen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 So I don't know exactly how it's going to evolve.
Oh boy. I don't know.
You know, we'll see. You know, I have to say something though about developers with big deep pockets, or I should say property owners with ample resources.
Yeah.
Is that if you're dealing with a property owner who basically is doing everything on, by grabbing financing from various banks and other institutions and things, where they have to kind of show a turnaround quick, and you have to make sure their old investors get all the money back. Then that actually can limit great things from happening. So for example, everybody loves to talk about putting some sort of a crossing of the railroad tracks to link the quadrangle and the triangle of Alewife area. Good idea. In my view, there should be more than one bridge. There should be a couple, and there ought to be a commuter rail station in there as well. Right. That's what some people, when Brian Murphy was, made the transition from city councilor to working for, I think it was a transportation planning, at the agency, whether it was DOT or whatever. But, you know, I was remember being out there with Brian and basically laying it all out and saying like, yeah, we're going to have an overpass here. We incorporated with a station and that's really what would have been ideal, you know. But and if this was 40 years ago, there would have been a lot of federal money for it. Hey, maybe there'll be some federal money now.
That's true. We got the infrastructure.
Right. But and people need to know how to creatively tap into that and do good things.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, we've been going through a period of a few decades where they're saying like, well, I'll tell you what, you know, maybe we'd like to have a bridge. Can you leave a little space for a landing here? And then maybe down the road, somebody we can actually extract some resources to do this in exchange for building more. You know, it's very nickel and dime-ish. But when you're dealing with some pretty serious players, you can make much more serious demands. And then maybe you can actually get some of these crossings built. And so.
Well, these are serious players. I think there was a.
I think so.
Seemed to indicate that you could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, acknowledge the fact that they now have a right to get some economic potential out of the property they dropped a lot of money on.
Yeah.
But say, but here's what we want, you know, and don't just say the usual stuff, you know. Come out, put out the sort of the interesting stuff to make
but,
this.
But does that mean that for 2 years they can't do anything with their property?
They could, but you know, they say you build at your own risk. So that I mean, honestly, I don't think there would be that much risk. But you know, and so they really shouldn't just sit on their hands. They should maybe get something interim going. But I don't think they necessarily be wanting to wait that long. So
that's a lot of time.
And I, by the way, the moratorium says.
We have to stop in a few seconds.
Yeah, for 2 years until we get something better in place. So,
all right. So well, we will see you in the next segment.
All right. Bye. See you then.